Part of the confusion today has to do with something that I assumed as a fact, and Dina Bundu confirmed. It doesn't rain in November. It doesn't rain in November. Remember that. It doesn't rain in November. But it rained in November, and so a little confusion. Had it not rained in November, some additional places that we might want to go to, I'll just describe indirectly. First, I was thinking those nice pastimes of Radha and Krishna and Jatila and Katila and Abhimanyu. For those that are outside of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, how would they relate? Throwing cow dung balls off the second floor. Big ones. Upon your son and brother. And the devotees laugh and laugh and love it. But it has to do with the charm, the sweetness of Braj. And the Parakiya Bhave, as the song we just sang describes. I'll narrate two things that are in relation to how the Gaudiya Vaishnavas view Parakiya Bhav. And for those of you that are not English speaking, and for those of you that are relatively new to Krishna consciousness, because there are a number of people here that are completely new to Krishna consciousness, I'll explain these two things, two terms, Svakiya and Parakiya. When Krishna married to the queens of Vrindavan, this is conjugal love and Svakiya in marriage. Dwarka, what did I say? Vrindavan, excuse me. Queens in Dwarka. Svakiya, marriage. Love between husband and wife in marriage, in Dwarka. And here in Braj, our Gaudiya Vaishnavas teach Parakiya Bhav. That is that although Radha and Krishna are eternally the Shakti and Shaktiman, they're inseparable. They're inseparable. That actually, according to Sarup Damodar Goswami, one entity in two forms. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is complete with unlimited potency. So there is no difference between, there's a difference, but there's unity between the energy and the energetic. Krishna is the energetic, and Radha is the energy, just as Narayan is the energetic, and Lakshmi is the energy. So, nice verse in the very beginning verses of Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Surup Damodar explains, Radha Krishna Pranaya Vikritir Ladini Shakti Asmat Ekat Manav Api Bhuvi Pura Deha Beda Deha Beda Gatau Tau. One entity eternally manifested in two forms. One entity eternally manifest in two forms. I'll say it again. One entity manifested in two forms. Ladini Shakti and Shaktiman. the possessor of that Shakti. One entity in two forms, Radha, Krishna. One entity. And Krishna enjoys with his energy. He enjoys with his pleasure energy, Ladini Shakti. He enjoys with Radha. Krishna doesn't need something outside of himself for enjoyment. We do. Supposing we're cold because of the rain and it's chilly. So we need something outside of ourselves to get warm. Or we want something to eat. So we need something outside of ourselves to eat. Or we want friendship. We need another person to have friendship with. We want love. And we want to be loved. We need something outside of ourselves. But Krishna doesn't need anything outside of himself. He's complete. And Radha is part of that completeness, one entity, eternally manifest in two forms. And the sweetness of the love of Radha and Krishna in Braj is unique, according to our Gaudiya Vaishnava teachings. Krishna associates with Radha, and Radha associates with Krishna outside of marriage. There's a certain intimacy in marriage. And if the same types of exchange take place outside of marriage, religiously, bad. Transcendentally, good. More than good. Rasa. Parakya rasa. Although they're one entity, eternally manifest as two. So I'll share something that I'll confess I haven't read, but I heard Sahotra Swami describe in detail, and Dinabandhu will correct me if I'm in error. During the time of the six Goswamis, believe it or not, there were others that were living in Vrindavan that have a different view on Swakiya and Parakiya Rasa. Can you believe it? There were others, not Gaudiya Vaishnavas, but there were other residents in Braj who were strong on Swakiya. And Lord Chaitanya taught Parakiya. And so the Goswamis taught Parakiya. And they not only taught it, they realized it. Then there was a nice incident, transcendental incident, where there was one Digvijay Pandit who came to Braj. Digvijay Pandit, like in Chaitanya Bhagavat or Chaitanya Charitamrita, a conquering logician who came to Braj. And he was looking for the most qualified person to have debate with. And he heard that Rupa Goswami was the best person to have debate with. So he went to Rupa Goswami and said, I challenge you to a debate, otherwise you sign this little receipt book that says you've been defeated. Rupa Goswami says, I'm sure your scholarship is far superior to mine. You've defeated me even without my having to speak. And so Digvijay was very happy. And he was showing everybody, Rupa Goswami has been defeated by me. He admits I'm the greater scholar. Now, one of the intimate associates of Rupa Goswami was Jiva Goswami. And when Jiva Goswami saw that this pundit says he defeated Jiva Goswami in argument. Ooh, that's not right. So he accepted a challenge in debate with the pundit. And according to the record, 7 days, Jiva Goswami thrashed the pundit until he was pulp. He was finished. Totally shamed. He left Braj. Jiva Goswami came to report, this man who said that you were defeated by him. Rupa Goswami was not happy. We don't argue with mundane wranglers. That's not our service to Krishna. Why have you used the skill that Krishna has given you, your great scholarship, wasting it in debate with a foolish man? Whenever there is pride of anyone who has received anything from Krishna, they're bound to misuse that thing which Krishna has given them. You are not fit to live in Vrindavan. You should leave Vrindavan. Jiva Goswami, one of our 6 Goswamis. You know, he's up there. He's not down there. He's up there. Leave Vrindavan. Jiva Goswami was crushed, but he left Vrindavan. And the version that I heard was, he left Vrindavan going upstream in the river Jamuna. And for approximately something like 1 year, he was gone out of Vrindavan. And everyone thought, heavy, as we say in America. Rupa Goswami was heavy. Guru means heavy. Ooh, he heavied him. So one day, Sanatan Goswami was taking his bath in the river Jamuna. And as he was taking bath in the river Jamuna, he saw floating by in the river Jamuna a manuscript on leaves. So he gathered it, and he immediately recognized the handwriting of Jiva Goswami. And he read the writing, and he confirmed, this is Jiva Goswami. This is elevated writing. Jiva Goswami is somewhere upstream in the river Jamuna. So he went along the riverbank of the river Jamuna and found where Jiva Goswami was living in a cave along the bank of the river Jamuna. He had written one book called Gopal Champu, in which Jiva Goswami places Swakya above Parakya. I'll come back to this in a moment. I'll say it now. In Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary on Sri Brahma Samhita, he makes reference, oblique and indirect reference, to Jiva Goswami because this incident I just described, or the Gopal Champu placing Swakya above Parakya. Jiva Goswami wanted to show or follow what appeared to be the instruction of Rupa Goswami. We don't argue with others who have a different, you know, keeping peace in amongst Vaishnavas. How to do that? Sometimes it's challenging. I can share with you someday some of the challenges of keeping peace in the Vaishnava family. I'll tell Dinabandhu afterwards what happened yesterday. Keeping peace within the Vaishnava family can be a little challenging sometimes. So, don't argue was what Jiva Goswami assimilated from Rupa Goswami, and so he wrote in this Gopal Champu this reversal. Swakya above Parakya, or Parakya is not that relationship that Radha and Krishna had, but Swakya. So Sanatan Goswami found Jiva Goswami. And after Jiva Goswami wrote, he became disgusted with himself. That's not what Rupa Goswami believes, and he threw the manuscript in the river. It was fortunately captured by Sanatan Goswami and later was published. So, lots of lessons in this pastime. But Sanatan Goswami encouraged Jiva Goswami, come with me. Rupa is my younger brother. I will make amends. Come with me. So he came back to Vrindavan. And Sanatan Goswami went to visit the bhajan kutir of Rupa Goswami and greeted his brother. Rupa, are you home? Yes, my dear brother Sanatan, is there some way I can serve you? Yes, you can answer an important question. Please consider carefully. What is the number one quality that any follower of Mahaprabhu must have? Principal quality anyone must have to be a Vaishnava, a follower of Lord Chaitanya. Immediately, Sanatana Rupa Goswami said, Jivadaya, mercy upon the jivas. And Sanatana Goswami said, yes, and here is one jiva. Please be merciful upon him. Forgive him. He's learned his lesson. He will never do this again. Please forgive him. Jiva Goswami fell at Rupa Goswami's feet and Rupa Goswami picked him up and embraced him. Yes, I wanted to teach him this lesson. A devotee should never allow pride to enter the heart. Now we as followers of Lord Chaitanya and the Goswamis do not take it that Jiva Goswami had pride in his heart. But the strictness, important, the strictness of training, even there may be the appearance of such a thing, strong. Rupa Goswami was strong. Of course, Jiva Goswami was strong enough to take it. Sometimes persons aren't strong enough to take it. So the same medicine isn't applied. In Sri Brahma Samhita, in the longest purport of Sri Brahma Samhita, something like 12, 13 pages, discussing the Parakiya Rasa, the relationship of the gopis and Radha with Krishna, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentions that Jiva Goswami, who was actually the commentator of Sri Brahma Samhita, from whose commentary Bhaktisiddhanta wrote his commentary, refers to this situation where Jiva Goswami Pad has spoken in this way, but actually he knows, as the other followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knows, Parakiya Rasa is the mellow of love that was experienced by Chaitanya, by Radha and Krishna during their pastimes. Although one entity in two different forms. I'll make one other reference. When we were visiting the Gokulananda temple downtown, and there was some discussion there about the life of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Can you remember that far back? It was 2 days, 3 days. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur came to Vrindavan. We discussed several generations, 4 generations after the principal Goswamis were present, and Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivasacharya and Shyamananda. So during that period of time, Aurangzeb was doing the, you know, Aparad program, and the Vaishnavas were very much afraid, and many Vaishnavas had left, and in short, the stature of Gaudiya Vaishnavism had diminished considerably, if not close to vanished, in Braja. And he came by his empowerment and transcendental purity. He reestablished the respectability and the presence, prominence of Gaudiya Vaishnavism in Braja. And he was super scholarly. So one of the events that took place during his life was, once again, some of the residents of Braja were strongly supportive of the notion of Swakya, Radha and Krishna were married. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur taught Parakya Rasa. They were not married, although they're one entity simply enjoying in two different forms. And a group of scholars came to challenge him. It's a very simple answer that he gave, and it relates to the area in Braj where we are now. I don't know which path you followed to get here, but I can tell you the path that we followed. We went on that main road, the Delhi-Agra road, and then took the turn that said Varsana. And then when we got to a T junction, instead of going to Varsana, we went another 10 kilometers in this direction to come to Nandagram. So where is between Nandagram and Varsana? His argument was, Radha lived in two places, Varsana and Yavat. You can do like a triangle. There's Varsana, there's Yavat, and there's Nandagram. So if Radha and Krishna were married, why did they meet at Sanket? Sanket is something like midway between Yavat, where she lived with Abhimanyu, and Nandagram. Not exactly straight line, but somewhere midway. And same, Varsana and Nandagram. And Sanket is somewhere in between. So his question was, if they were married, why did they meet in Sanket? That was his argument. And the man was defeated. Because if they're married, let's do it, you know, extend it. If they were married, they would meet either at, you know, her place or his place, not a third place. Sanket is a place where its special spiritual significance is one of the places where Radha and Krishna would meet. In Parakya Bhav. And so it has special significance. And the Gaudiya Vaishnavas respect that mood. But then when you read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on Rasalila, those chapters from 10th canto, many verses in a row, he explains explicitly that Radha and the gopis are direct expansions of Radha. I'll say that again. The gopis are direct expansions of Radha, and Radha is Krishna's internal potency. So there's nothing irreligious at all about what Krishna was simply enjoying his own potency. Anyone else who wants to enjoy another man's wife or an unmarried girl is irreligious. And what Krishna did is transcendentally perfect religious. I'll tell one other story. Maybe you've not heard this one. Rabindra Swarup Prabhu told us this story. I've heard this like 5-6 times. It's one of those, you can hear it so many times, especially when he tells it. Rabindra Swarup Prabhu was a PhD student in philosophy at University of Pennsylvania, a Ivy League school. For those of you that are from India, it's like, you know, one of the top schools in America is where he did his PhD. And he became a devotee as a PhD student. And he knew that Srila Prabhupada liked to speak Krishna consciousness to educators and politicians, government people, to help them see transcendental significance of a life in devotion to Krishna. So Rabindra thought, this would be a great opportunity. I can take my PhD professor, the one he was doing his PhD under, and invite him to meet Srila Prabhupada when Prabhupada comes to Philadelphia. So Prabhupada accepted, and the man accepted, and the arrangement was made. They sat down, and the first thing the man said to Prabhupada, how can you worship a man who engages in relationships with another man's wife? How can you worship such a person? That was the first thing. Rabindra said, I wanted to disappear. I wanted to like shrink and like slip under the rug or something. Like, I brought my spiritual master to come here and be offended. What a horrible thing. You know, you want to like whisk the professor out of the room or do something. But Prabhupada didn't hesitate, didn't skip a beat. He said, Krishna is not the irreligious person. You are the irreligious person. Because all living entities are Krishna's parts and parcels, and you're trying to be the enjoyer of Krishna's energy. You are the vilifier. Whoa! The table was turned. And it's the logic or the message of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is the same. It's Radha is Krishna's energy. It's not even like his lawful wife. It's his energy. In marriage, that's lawful, although it's Krishna's energy, it's lawful. One can be with husband and wife together, and it's lawful. But still, it's Krishna's energy, and to be the enjoyer of Krishna's energy, even it's lawful, is still awful. Thank you. The man, the professor, was flustered. He didn't know what to say. He got offended, and I don't know the rest of what happened, because Rabindra said, when Prabhupada spoke, Rabindra had accepted Prabhupada as his guru. Now here's his guru telling the man next to him that you're a sinful man. And Rabindra is saying, if he's a sinful man, then I'm a sinful man too, because Rabindra was married. And he said, I'm not sinful. I'm not doing anything irreligious. I love my wife and we're happily married and, what's wrong? But Prabhupada said, I'm sinful. And the detail of what happened after that initial exchange, I never heard Rabindra say. He was just like absorbed in this doubt of himself or Prabhupada or, what? What am I to do with this statement? Because he was a very sincere devotee. It wasn't just, Prabhupada said something to the professor. He said he couldn't sleep all night long. He was in such anxiety. Fortunately, he had some realization in the early morning hours of sleeplessness that Prabhupada is right, that actually I have an issue with Krishna. I have an eternal relationship with Krishna, but in order to become an enjoyer of Krishna's property, that issue that I have with Krishna has obscured the fact that actually my wife is Krishna's property. And I should hear it that way, not as a lawfully enjoyable object. So, back to Vrindavan. Radha is Krishna's Ladini Shakti. And the gopis are expansions of Radha. And when Radha is engaging in conjugal relation with his energy, it's transcendental pleasure, as much as when Krishna's engaging with the cowherd boys. It's transcendental pleasure. It's the pleasure of the cowherd boys being manifested in the form of Krishna's exchanging loving dealings with his devotees. or Krishna exchanging loving dealings with Nanda and Yashoda, and the cows and the peacocks. There's a purport where Prabhupada is explaining that in Vrindavan, in the transcendental realm of Vrindavan, everything is conscious. There's loving exchange with all the living entities, the trees, the grass, the birds, the river Jamuna, the fish in the river Jamuna, even the rocks. Everything is conscious. And everything in Vrindavan has its eternal situation of relation with Krishna, in love with Krishna, conscious of that loving relation with Krishna. And so, when we come to Vrindavan, it's not just a matter of buying a ticket. We have some persons here who they couldn't even buy a ticket to get to Vrindavan. They bought the ticket, but when they got to the airport, they were told, your visa isn't valid, you have to go back to your country. Come back with a valid visa. There was challenges just to get here to Vrindavan. And now we're in Vrindavan, and now, you know, it's raining in November. And we can't go to these nice places. Or we could, but you know, just get everybody wet and get sick for tomorrow, so we're not going. But the transcendental relation is the sweetness that attracts us to come to Vrindavan. I'll say a couple more things and then invite Dinabandhu to do whatever he wants to do. Huh? It's 3:20. Okay. I'll make some suggestions, but you do what you like. I'd like to speak a little bit about Ter Kadamba. And here at Pavan Sarovar, I understand you didn't go there, but there's a bhajan kutir of Sanatan Goswami. You heard about it, but you didn't see it. So I'd like to describe a little bit about Sanatan Goswami. We know from the prayers to the six Goswamis that they didn't have any fixed residence. They would sleep under trees, different tree. So there was a big tree over there, and he slept under that big tree. He also spent time at... The fan is working. Amazing. Can someone turn the fan off? Or it just runs on its own, maybe. Okay. 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 Hare Krishna. What's next? He spent time at Radhakund. He spent time, there's one place where there's a little Madan Mohan temple at Radhakund. And there's a place where he chanted his japa. When we go to Govardhan Prakram, we'll see these different places. He had his temple or his place of bhajan in Madan Mohan in Vrindavan. And so he would move about. But one of the places that was a favorite place is right here by Pavan Sarovar. And there's a wonderful leela that I'll try my best to describe that took place in relation to Rupa Goswami. There's a nice painting. Many of you have seen the painting. For those of you that haven't, I'll just describe. There's Rupa Goswami kind of hunched over and writing. He's writing as he did at Ter Kadamba, very close to here. Six mud puddles in that direction is where Ter Kadamba is. He would enter into such a deep mood of devotion that the forms of life around him, and particularly the Kadamba tree under which he was residing, would respond to that emotion. When he was writing about the separation of Radha and Krishna, his mood was so intense that the Kadamba tree would shed like tears, shed all the leaves of the Kadamba tree. And Kadamba trees are big. They have lots of leaves, and they just fell to the ground out of a mood of separation of Radha and Krishna. And sometimes he'd be writing about the meeting of Radha and Krishna. And suddenly, the Kadamba leaves would blossom, and the flowers, many Kadamba flowers would blossom in jubilation, celebrating the meeting of Radha and Krishna, just from the influence of Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami was on such a platform of Krishna consciousness. So we may read his writings generations later. May we become like the Kadamba tree and experience the love of Rupa Goswami poured into his writings and feel the separation and feel the joy of meeting of Radha and Krishna. So one time he was writing and writing and writing. And you see in the painting, coming down the road, in the distance, is a young village girl, a Brijbasi girl. We see this all the time. We're walking here and there, little Brijbasi girls with pots on their head, feeling transformed by the pots on their head. So she was walking along the road, and she approached Rupa Goswami and said, "My dear Rupa, there's been a wedding in our village, and the people who are hosting the wedding, they asked me to give this gift to your brother because it's his birthday, Sanatan Goswami's birthday. It's for him. Can you see that he gets it?" So Rupa Goswami said, "Certainly. He's just down at the Bhajan Kutir or by Pavan Sarovar. And from Terakadamba to there, no problem. I'll be seeing him anyway. I'll be glad to take." So as the day went on, he brought the nice pot of sweet rice to Sanatan Goswami to offer as a gift on his birthday in honor of the wedding that's taking place in a nearby village. And we heard when we were at Madan Mohan Temple, the nature of Sanatan Goswami was, although he was on the topmost platform of Krishna consciousness, he was of such a caring nature that he knew he would go from village to village, and he knew all about everybody's everything. They disclosed everything to him. And he gave them advice on every little thing of their life. He would ask them, "How have your crops gone this year? How is your cow? One of your cows was sick. Is the cow well? I understand that one of your daughters is pregnant and you're going to have a baby soon. What is the birthday?" And details and details and details and details. And they understood that he's like a father. He's not, you know, like small talk. He cares very deeply for each and every one of us. And so when he would go from village to village, they would see him off at the village, brokenhearted that he was leaving, and the others at the next village be waiting at the edge of the village in joy and celebration. Sanatan Goswami is going to come and spend time with us. And everyone wanted to sit at his feet and hear from him and share with him. And he was there. Dear most loving friend and father, at the same time giving transcendental knowledge, wasn't just like a family guru kind of a relationship. It was a transcendental relationship because they're residents of Braja. He had such affinity for them and imparted always transcendental knowledge. We discussed this at Madan Mohan Temple. So when Rupa Goswami brought this pot of sweet rice, he said, "What wedding is this? I don't know of any wedding in a nearby village. I know of all the weddings that are coming, and there's no wedding today. Let me see the sweet rice." And he began taking the sweet rice and He felt ecstasy welling within his body. His body began trembling. Tears were standing on end, tears streaming from his eyes, and said, "Rupa, can you tell me a little bit about this girl that brought the sweet rice in the village where the wedding was being held?" And as Rupa Goswami was describing, Sanatan Goswami could immediately understand this was Srimati Radharani, who personally came to bring sweet rice. "Rupa, what have you done? We're serving Radha, and now you've engaged me in accepting service from Radha. How terrible. But the sweet rice is so good." "Here, Rupa, taste it." "It's definitely made by Srimati Radharani's hand. How else could it taste so nectar?" And so he was crying tears of ecstasy after directly receiving Radha's mercy, and tears of lamentation, "Oh, I've received service from Radha." Such conflicting emotions were erupting in his heart. Such is the level of Krishna consciousness of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. We cannot imagine the intimacy of their transcendental attraction for Radha and Krishna. So right here at Pavan Sarovar was one of the places where Sanatan Goswami kept his bhajan chanting and meditating upon, engaging in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna in this very place. It looked a little different than where we're seated right now, but at that time, it's the same transcendental place. And just six mud puddles that way is Terkadamba, where Rupa Goswami spent such wonderful time writing literatures that later would be translated into English by Srila Prabhupada. It's said that that's that one of the primary places where he wrote Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And I'm going to ask Dina Bandhu to describe that nice verse that's above the Krishna Balaram doorway that was written by Raghunath Das Goswami, where Raghunath Das Goswami expresses his appreciation, his love for Rupa Goswami. And Raghunath Das Goswami is way up there also. Besides, he's one of the six Goswamis. He's our Prayojana Guru. He had intimate association with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for all that time that Mahaprabhu was in Puri, experiencing the highest stages of love of God. He was right there. And hearing from Sarup Damodar what Lord Chaitanya was experiencing, what his feelings were, he was accessing that. That's Raghunath Das Goswami, who looks up to Rupa Goswami, wishing just to have a speck of dust of Rupa Goswami's lotus feet upon his head, life after life. Such a revered personality is Rupa Goswami, and one of his principal places of bhajan is Terkadamba. So I'm going to invite Dina Bandhu to speak in English something about Terkadamba, the Lord Shiva temple nearby, and Yavat.